The Sci-Fi Christian Top 50 Sci-Fi TV Show Countdown.
Numbers 10 through number 1.
Yeah!
Here it goes.
Number 1 coming up. I can't wait.
Are you counting like what's not on
Welcome
there yet?
To the Sci-Fi Christian. I am. Bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Ben DiBono, and we... Well, I'll tell you what we are, Matt. You know what we are?
What?
You know what we are?
What?
We are back!
Back.
No, we're not.
Not really. We're still away, actually.
Yeah. Sorry. Should have saved that enthusiastic we are back for
when we're actually Well, this is
the last
of our pre-recorded episodes. Probably sounds weird to say, because people are going to be listening to this in the future, so technically all episodes are pre-recorded, but we're doing this in advance because we are taking the month of August 2013 off, as I have probably, as you're listening to this, just got
sabbatical.
I just got home from my honeymoon, and you just left for a trip to Seattle.
Yeah.
So, well, hello, everybody. We're going to be back with you next week with some brand new episodes, so if you've been sending in listener feedback wondering why we're ignoring you, we'll get to it next week.
We're not going to read all of it.
The news episode is going to be crazy next week. How are we going to cover the last month of news?
I think we're just
going
to have to choose highlights. And this is where, like, you know, I like to make our audience work. I don't like to hold their hands and coddle them too much. So you're going to have to go out to some of those websites yourself. But we're going to bring the highlights.
If you think that there's a news item that must be discussed on the show, email it to me at...
No, don't.
Yeah, I want
just
to
assume we got it.
No. I want them to, you know, feedback.
Feedback at thesci-fichristian.com.
Or at matt@thesci-fichristian.com. I just want to know if there's something that happens. I'm not going to be following news at all while I'm away.
What?
No, I'm not going to be. I'm going to be traveling California. I'm not going to be checking my phone for news.
Come on. You can follow some news. What else are you going to do?
I don't know. Drive? I'll be driving. Because we're doing a road trip from San Diego to San Francisco. I should have asked listeners for advice on places to visit, but by the time they hear this, I'll be home.
Golden Gate Bridge is nice.
Yeah, I should write that down. Golden Gate Bridge. You've been to San Francisco?
Oh, when I was 2, so I don't remember it well.
So you're actually lying to me. You don't know if it's even nice.
Well, I saw it in a movie. It was called X-Men: The Last Stand.
Oh, interesting. Okay, good. Do you have the music queued up? Because I can't wait to get to this.
The Sci-Fi Christian presents the top 50 sci-fi shows of all time. And now, live from BAM Studios, your hosts, Matt Anderson and Ben DiBono.
I love that part. That was great. Ben, you, based on the shows you've already heard, put together a list of what you thought were the top 10.
Yeah.
But I think you had 8.
I had 11.
Oh, you had 11.
Yeah, because then you sent me one that wasn't, that I'd missed. So I don't know if I'm forgetting something. But yeah, I've got my list. So, I'm not going to pull it up. Try and pull it up.
Okay, in all other episodes, I've told you ahead of time what was coming up. But this episode is going to be totally a surprise for you.
So you're going to hear some ranting. Because what has happened in the past is you send me the message on Facebook, and then I instantly write you back, usually with some type of rant about how could this
be so high.
Exactly. How could that be so low?
And I knew you were going to be mad about one in particular, and so I told you ahead of time that it was on the list. And
you were a little perturbed about it too. Now, in fairness, I haven't seen that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you've never seen the show?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get to the list. Why don't you just
give you a number 10?
Yeah.
Number 10.
Number 10 is Heroes, the TV show Heroes, and I am shocked
that flabbergasted
that this is in the top 10. Now, I liked Hero season 1 for sure. Season 1 was amazing, but then we had seasons 2, 3, and 4 of not goodness.
Yeah.
And so Heroes debuted in 2006.
You're right. I only had 8 on my original list.
Yeah.
And then I came up with one more, and then you told me Heroes. So I think I have the top 10.
Oh, wow. So ran until 2010. It just recently was announced that they were going to be continuing the series in comic book form. Had you heard that?
No.
Yeah. So Heroes, if you liked that show, it's going to be continuing. And honestly, I'll probably look into maybe the first trade just to see what it's like. Because I watched all the episodes. I did follow it. I think season 1 was so good. It just made me keep holding on, hoping it could get back to its glory days.
Yeah.
And never did. But don't just take my word for it. Hear what one of our listeners / co-hosts had to say. Here's Daniel Butcher.
All right.
Hey, this is Daniel Butcher, and I'm calling to talk about Heroes. I loved Heroes. I defend Heroes to this day. I debate Heroes. I'm the guy who they're actually marketing this extra, this new season via comic book to, because Heroes is probably easily one of my top five shows of all time. And fun fact, it's also the reason that Pat Anderson and I are friends. You laugh, but it's true. When I first met Matt Anderson at a small group, what the first question he ever asked me was, do you watch Lost? Which I'm sure shocks many of you. I said, no. And then very sheepishly said, but I do watch Heroes. And from there, me and Matt just broke into one of the longest superhero talks of a small group ever. And we both found out that we listened to the same podcast, the 10th Wonder, and that we were huge, huge Hero fans. I'm the guy who actually watched every single episode to the end. I'm that guy who kept it on. I'm that guy who loved Heroes. So what about Heroes did I love? First, let me tell you a little story. One day, I caught Heroes on NBC's website because I thought it sounded really stupid. And what I found out when I caught the show on their website, which I never watch shows online, is that I love this show. And the first thing I did is I went home and told my wife, we have to watch this show. We have to watch it together. You're going to love it. So we watched it, and she agreed with me that that pilot episode was fantastic. So then it became part of our show that we watched every week. Well, about 4 weeks into it, we found out something. At the time, I was a youth pastor, and all my kids were watching Heroes, which turned into an event because we set it up for the next two seasons where we watched Heroes in the church rec room, where we projected it up on the wall every single week. And it was great because there was so much content in there about spiritual issues and about purpose, that as soon as the commercial hit, we'd hit pause on the sound, and we would all be able to just dump all this conversation into each other about the things that we had seen, the things that we had felt about Heroes. The other thing is, me growing up, I was a comic book guy. So this was me finally seeing, like, basically the X-Men universe in a real-world way up on the screen, because it wasn't silly costumes, it wasn't craziness, but it was mutations. And just regular people learning to deal with those mutations and these new powers that they have. I mean, what office worker wouldn't want to suddenly wake up and discover that you have control over time and space? I mean, how fantastic was that? And you knew, and one of those big conversations that we had every week was, how is this all going to come together? Because we knew every one of these pieces was going to come together and just touch each other, and all these stories were going to wind up being one story, which it was, even though we didn't get the huge, major New York City battle that we wanted at the end. So what killed Heroes? So here's my theory. Well, killed Heroes was two things. Success, because with success, they changed their plan, because their original plan was that every season they were going to have a different big bad. And with the success that they had, Siler was just way too popular, and they enjoyed him too much, so instead of them just killing off Siler and being done and moving to the next big bad, they went ahead and they kept him around, which meant that they had to create this situation where we have him around, we got to use him, they changed their writing plans and their writing strategies, and then you wound up doing some things that are very comic book, but at the same time, began to get annoying with, is Siler a Petrelli? He's not a Petrelli. He's a good guy. He's a bad guy. And in many ways, to be honest, it kind of got convoluted. I didn't say that out loud. Heroes is fantastic. No one should ever question Heroes. The other thing that killed it was the writer's strike. Because with the writer's strike, they weren't able to do the season two that they wanted, even the adapted season two with Siler. That I don't think they were ever able to accurately and adequately give Adam Monroe the story that he deserved, because that he was a fantastic character, and in the end, he just didn't get his full season to be in the big bad that he should have been. And I think from that point, what happened is, since things weren't hitting, they just kept doing this, adjusting, and the adjusting just got more and more convoluted for a lot of fans where they couldn't watch anymore. Unlike me, who was there every week, happy and drinking the Kool-Aid. So, one of my all-time favorite sci-fi shows of all time, I give you the reason Matt Anderson and I are friends. Heroes.
You know, this is... Thank you very much. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you. His voicemail actually got me excited about Heroes again because he reminded me of some things that, yeah, it's totally true. Season one was amazing. They had some great episodes. In fact, much like Lost, I've said this before on the show, but when Lost first started, I liked the pilot, but I didn't love the second episode, which was a Kate-centric episode. And then the fourth, well, if you split the pilot into two episodes, the fourth episode just blew me away, and that was what hooked me on Lost. Okay, same thing happened with Heroes. I was close to stopping to watch Heroes after maybe the second or third episode, and then they had this awesome episode where a character who had already been established in the first set of episodes, who was a time traveler, the future version of this guy appears. I think it was the fourth episode of Heroes, and that was what locked me. And then I stuck through it, and I saw every episode straight through. They also did a sweet episode where the whole episode took place, I think like 5 years in the future or something like that. And so they were kind of telling us this is where the storyline is going. And so that was kind of exciting. So season one was so strong, and Daniel's right. They had planned to have every season would be a new set of heroes.
Yeah.
So maybe you're familiar with Save the Cheerleader, Save the World.
Right.
That was a sweet storyline. But so the cheerleader, maybe she was prominent in season one, but maybe she'd just make a few guest appearances in season two. So she wouldn't be non-existent, but she wouldn't be the main focus. But because of the popularity of these characters, I mean, it became a worldwide phenomenon. They had all the characters come back over and over again. They had this idea, and you were recently saying on an episode that you thought Once Upon a Time was oversaturating because now they're going to have Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason you didn't like that is because they were going to have it run year long. Well, that is an idea they had for Heroes, where they were going to have a spinoff series called Heroes Origins, which would be sort of like where Twilight Zone was a one-and-done episode in the old days, and you could have maybe famous actors come on and be in the role because it wasn't meant to continue on.
Yeah.
They were going to have Heroes Origins, where they'd maybe just tell one story of an interesting character, and if it took off with the audience, they could bring that person into the main hero storyline, and if not, it was just one episode for entertainment. So Jeff Loeb of comic fame, he was the writer of Heroes, or one of the main guys behind it. Just like Lost got affected by the writer's strike, Heroes was really negatively affected by the writer's strike in the sense that, this is going to be a little spoiler, but I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. The first half of season two, which ended up being all of season two because of the strike, the first half was going to set up that there was this virus. And then at the end of season two, instead of the heroes being able to stop the virus from being released, it was going to be released. And then we're going to open up the second half of season two in kind of a dark world. And now what's happened since this virus has affected this area?
Yeah.
Well, what ended up happening is since the writer's strike hit and they had to wrap up season two, they to save the virus from being leaked to the world, and then blah, 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 kind of nothingness. Not that interesting. Right. So it just never picked up again after the strike.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel's enthusiasm makes me interested in maybe checking it out sometime, but I think even his voicemail suggests that this really shouldn't be in the top 10, because somebody as enthusiastic as that saying, yeah, I love the show, but there were some problems, suggests that, no, this doesn't really deserve to be in the top 10.
That's exactly what I would say, is that I think you can tell I do really feel strongly for Heroes. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't put it on my top 20, but I think it deserves to be on a top 25.
Right. It's just a little too high, probably.
I think it's too high, but I still really like Heroes. I feel like you could watch season one, and even though there are some points that you could see where they could continue on, I feel like season one is a story of its own.
Yeah.
So, all right. Sorry, that was a really good one. Okay,
number nine, I'm going to guess.
Okay.
Now, remember, I don't know any of these. I'm going to guess that number nine is Stargate SG-1.
Nope. Number nine is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, that's way too low considering some of the things coming up.
Yeah, and so...
Oh, man, I'm disappointed in you people.
All right, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now, this has been a long, ongoing story on the Sci-Fi Christian. I'm watching it now. I'm very close to finishing it.
Yeah.
Season 7, I'm in halfway through. This show started in 1997, wrapped up in 2003. So we just had the 10-year anniversary of the last episode.
Yes.
I think you should talk more about this because you've actually seen it in full.
Yeah. Buffy is incredible. I mean, the first season is a little weak, but it's also a season that, in retrospective, I think you would agree with this probably now that you've watched nearly the whole show. If you were to go back and watch season one now, you would probably enjoy it more because of the characters
that you're invested in.
But after that first season, man, it was just so good, so consistently. And yes, it is one of these shows that has too many episodes every season, so there are a few weak points here and there in a given episode. But the way that it was able to tell convincing storylines, it did do that thing that Daniel's talking about with Heroes, where every season kind of had its own story and then wrapped up with ongoing threads, of course. But such a brilliant show. In fact, I would say that in some ways it's a better show than Firefly, if only because it's more complete than Firefly.
Okay.
Obviously, Firefly is going to be good on this, higher on this list than Buffy, unless it didn't make the top 50, which seems a little unlikely.
Yeah.
But I think you can make a strong argument that Buffy should be higher than Firefly. So it's a real shame to see it only at number 9.
Yeah, I think I when you compare Buffy to Firefly, Firefly has an advantage in the sense that there are less episodes, and so people are comparing Firefly, what I think they're comparing their expectations of what Firefly could be with what Buffy is. And so because Buffy had 20 to 25 season or episode seasons, and there were some slow parts, and it just, I don't know, there's something weird about a show being on really long, and like kind of like you feel like if there's too many episodes, you almost don't want to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels intimidating. So you can kind of see where the fluff is in Buffy.
Right.
So I love it, though.
Yeah.
I really like
it. I think if Firefly had, the potential was there for it to be maybe the best show of all time. But the argument would be after 14 episodes, 13 episodes, does it, is that enough to justify that potential? I'm not talking anything bad about the show. I mean, we're talking top 10 stuff here. Okay. Yeah. I'm just maybe putting forth the argument that if you take what's actually on screen, not what could have been, but what's on screen, Buffy is a better show.
It's interesting. And we'll have a full Buffy Angel retrospective when I complete it. I don't know when that will be exactly, but I still have about two seasons of Angel. And
September's full.
Yes, so. I think we're looking at early next year, probably.
Okay.
So, all right, I'm ready for the next one.
Number 8. Well, I already guessed Stargate, so I'm going to say Stargate or Deep Space Nine, one of those two.
Number 8 is Star Trek.
Or Star Trek.
The original series.
Hey, I'm glad that that's the lowest Star Trek of the top 10, because we're going to have three Star Treks in here.
Yes.
If you've been playing along at home.
Oh, you're like, you're guessing that all these Star Trek episodes are going to, because you don't know the top 10.
I don't.
All right, well, series ran from 1966 to 1969.
Yeah.
Really important to science fiction television.
Very, very much. And even as somebody who's not a fan, I can definitely, it deserves a high spot on this list, despite my earlier joking that, you know, we were going to ban Star Trek from the list. But yeah, I think that you also have to look at, and the reason why I'm glad it's not higher than this, is because even though it's important, does it really hold up for a first-time viewer? Not really.
Because I'm a little different than a first-time viewer, because I'm mildly invested in the Star Trek universe based on Next Generation.
Right.
Some Deep Space Nine, some Voyager, and that's about it. So I already like that world. And when I go back and watch the original series, it's been hard for me to get through, because I recently tried. And I still am going to do it, going to push through, because I feel like this is one of those shows that you owe it to yourself to watch. And I know that you don't agree with that.
Well, I've watched, I've tried.
Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, but no, I think if you're bored out of your tree with something, then there's no reason to keep going.
Yeah, I do get bored with it. But I think there's going to be some episodes that are really boring and some that are really interesting. So I'm just going to keep going through. And I think I'll probably focus more on other shows like Twilight Zone and X-Files, which we want to go back to. But this is still on my radar. I still want to watch slowly, like maybe one episode a month.
Yeah,
that's fair.
For the next 20 years.
So, but Star Trek definitely deserves a top 10 spot, no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, ready.
I'm going to keep these. This guessing game isn't going so well since I keep being wrong, but Stargate or Deep Space Nine?
Give me the number.
8?
Nope.
Number 8?
No, it's number 7.
Number 7.
Number 7 is Star Trek. Deep Space Nine.
There we go. Now I got it.
Yeah. So Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I did watch, but I feel like of all the Star Treks that are out there, this is maybe the one that you and I would like the most.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it all the way through. I was a kid when this was coming out. Premiered in 1993, ran until 1999. So I watched a lot of the early seasons when I was pretty young and then did not watch it all the way through.
Yeah.
I think that the best stuff is what we missed, or what I missed, I should say. There were some ongoing storylines. I feel like this is one I definitely want to go back and watch, but I never loved the cast of Deep Space Nine. Like, there's no character I really am drawn to, and so even though I believe what people say when they say this is good, it's hard for me to want to go and check it out.
Yeah, and this was the one that I watched five episodes of for Robin when he won the Sci-Fi Trivia Challenge. And there was a couple that were really good, and then there was a couple that were like, it would be good in parts and then not live up to its potential, and some stuff that was just really cheesy and didn't hold up at all. So really a mixed bag from what I saw. And yes, it was only five episodes, but they were a huge Deep Space Nine fan picking them out for me. So I would argue that they at least were representative of high quality, I would assume.
Did you watch the episode The Visitor? Was that one of the episodes? That was the one where there was some time travel aspects.
Yeah.
Did you like that one?
It was one where there's some really good and interesting parts of it, and then there's some really, really cheesy stuff in there.
Okay. You had talked about Robin from the UK earlier, and he actually had a lot of Star Trek thoughts, and so he edited it down for me, and I wanted to make sure I got some of his thoughts on Deep Space Nine, because like you said, he's just a huge fan of this. So here we go. Here's Robin from the UK.
So I thought I'd just put some context into where I'm coming from before I add any comments. I first saw Star Trek in the early 90s when they were showing it on the BBC. I watched it with my dad. I was young enough that it was still quite scary and quite exciting. I wasn't really allowed to watch The Next Generation because my parents thought it was a bit too new age and all that kind of thing. I was allowed to watch the occasional episode just to see how bad it was, apparently. Unfortunately, the few episodes that I did see tended to be quite good. But it wasn't really until sort of the mid-90s when I was at secondary school, and on the last day of term, one of the teachers brought in a Deep Space Nine video and really inspired my imagination. And so when that came on BBC, I watched Deep Space Nine. I think I've probably made my views clear on previous feedback about what Star Trek I prefer. I like them all, but Deep Space Nine is definitely the number one for me. It's my favourite TV series. It was a real development from The Next Generation. It built on the bones of what The Next Generation created, and I'm not taking away from what they did, because they came up with so many races that became important in future series and episodes. But what Deep Space Nine did was it really correlated all those things together, and by giving us some non-Starfleet crew, enabled us to go into those races much more. It pushed the envelope in terms of what you could do in a Star Trek series with the kind of deep stories and the ramifications that came from them. In a ship-based series, generally you have your adventure on a planet or in a region of space and then you move on. But with Deep Space Nine, they were learning to build a nation or a planet and protect that area of space. From a sci-fi Christian perspective, it's also the most rewarding and interesting because it has a lot of discussion of religion and faith, which the other series tended to avoid because there is a prevailing humanist attitude in Star Trek. With Deep Space Nine, we saw characters who were actually holding up their torch for faith and belief over science, and occasionally some of the Starfleet characters would have mildly heated words with some of the other characters. It showed a fairly balanced view of both the bad in terms of political machinations and schemes, as well as the good in terms of charity and relying on faith and all that kind of thing. And it all just makes for a fascinating watch. At the time, people probably missed a lot of episodes and didn't understand, but I think nowadays, when you have access to the series in so many ways, it is definitely one of those series you can just watch several episodes at a time. And there is so much connectivity, so many things mean things for later on. You really delve into the characters and the races that they represent. And it's by far the most satisfying TV series I've ever seen.
All right. Thank you very much, Robin. And as I had said, Robin had sent me multiple clips that he originally recorded a quite long clip, but then realized for the show's sake, it'd be better to separate them out. So thanks for editing that for
thank
us.
Thank you, Robin.
And thanks for those thoughts. And yeah, you had to be on the show because you're just such a huge, I know, Deep Space Nine specifically fan. And you even won the first ever Sci-Fi Christian contest that made Ben watch some TV. The last contest, I think we're canceling because no one responded. So we'll have a new contest coming in September.
Yes, easier contest that won't require you to listen to Life Report episodes.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, should we...
number six.
Number six. Now, do you want to guess?
Well, stick with Stargate.
Stargate, SG-1. There we go.
Finally guess something different next time.
All right. So, now we've talked about this in previous episodes. Neither of us have watched this TV show.
No.
And 10 seasons.
Holy smokes.
Just say, there are 214 episodes plus two DVD films. The Arc of Truth and Continuum. This is based on the 1994 movie Stargate, which both of us have seen. It originally premiered on Showtime. A lot of people don't know that. One of my friends told me that when it's in syndication, it's more of a clean show, but the early Showtime episodes are a little bit explicit. So watch out for that.
Well, I will watch out for that.
The series premiered in 1997 and it ran until 2007. Obviously, that makes sense with 10 seasons.
You can do math.
I did a little math there. So
good job.
This is interesting. Stargate SG-1 had surpassed The X-Files as the longest-running North American science fiction television series, but the record was later broken by Smallville. Not much for me to say about Stargate SG-1. I do think it deserves...
Number five.
No, listen. I think it deserves to be on the top list, but since I haven't seen it, I can't guarantee it should be a top 10. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm not going to watch it.
I guess since it's spun off into Atlantis and Stargate Universe.
Yeah, top 10 seems a little high considering some of the other stuff that was lower.
I think 10 is probably good for this one because it ran for 10.
15.
Ran.
Well, that doesn't mean it should get 10. That means the show that only ran for one season should get one.
No, I'm just saying.
That's like the worst logic I've ever heard.
You didn't even let me finish my sentence.
That's probably why it's the worst logic I've ever heard.
I'm basically just saying it was popular enough. It must have been good to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, popular doesn't equal good.
Shows don't typically run for 10 years, though, unless there's some goodness in them.
What about soap operas?
Okay, you win. Number five.
I'm going to guess is The Next Generation.
All right, so... Nope, you're wrong. Number five
is Lost.
Is Lost. And now, if you've been following our Facebook page, you know that there was an announced three-way tie between Lost, Battlestar Galactica, and Doctor Who. Yes. And so, because there was a tie, we had to leave it to the fans to vote this one out.
Well, that's not what we did initially.
Well, what, initially you and I were going to just make it up?
We were going to make it up, and then I said, well, that's not going to work because I'm going to vote for BSG and you're going to vote for Lost. Yeah. And then you offered a compromise.
And the compromise was?
Lost will come in second, you choose the other one. And I was like, well, we can do that if you want to, but I feel a little bad because it's a little arbitrary and unfair to Lost.
And the whole thing has been voted on by the fans.
Well, it was more that I wanted your show to have a chance.
Okay.
So I wanted it to have a fighting chance.
And it did not, I mean, we
it
can't
started
get
it out good.
We, yeah, it started out good with two early votes, but we won't tell you how it ends. But Lost ended up losing
quite decisively.
But with that being said, Lost is my favorite television show of all time.
No.
Yeah. What?
Really?
Well, Breaking Bad.
I'm just kidding.
I like Breaking Bad.
Well, I know I was being sarcastic. I know Lost is your favorite show.
I think Breaking Bad is a better show.
It is a better show.
But I love Lost.
Yeah.
So
you're gonna miss the new season on your honeymoon.
Breaking Bad?
Yeah, it starts on August 11th.
So Lost premiered in 2004.
Yeah, it did.
The finale in May 23rd, 2010.
And it's a part of you.
A sad, sad day for me. I love Lost. I feel like I've talked about it so much. We have two episodes dedicated to it. We're having another episode in September about
a better one.
A Lost trivia challenge.
It won't be Lost Part 3.
Between me and Wayne Henderson from Lost
Casting. We'll just call it Lostgasm because that's what it's going to be.
Oh, man. I can't wait for Lost. So, I don't know. Tell me something. I talk about Lost all the time. You just tell me.
Well, I think it's probably good for your emotional health that it ended.
This is not an exaggeration. I was actually glad when it ended because I remember thinking, now I have time to focus more on my relationship with God. Because I spent so many hours in reading about Lost online and listening to podcasts. I seriously had made it an idol. I'll just be honest. It was too much to me. So, but no, tell me your experiences with Lost and what you think about it.
Well, yeah, I think it's a show that I enjoyed a lot when it was on. You know, I didn't start watching till season 5, so I caught up right before season 5. And
you caught up on the DVDs.
Yeah, and then, you know, really, really enjoyed it. And I think that my thoughts are kind of once the fervor of the finale calmed down and everything, and to be able to look back on it a bit more objectively, I think it's a show that from a character standpoint and a theme standpoint is just about perfect. And from a plot and mystery standpoint, really has some issues.
And you think it has issues because it didn't answer some of the mysteries it presented?
Yeah, it did a really poor job of resolving things.
So, I do want to make a comment about the end, but I think we have one call that you're going to bring up. Now, our friend Rick from Wisconsin had sent in a voicemail, but he did a little bit of a spoiler in it. So we're going to actually cut in the middle of this one where we can take out. What's wrong? Oh, you lost that?
Yeah, but I can get it because I know where.
Okay,
where
so you're supposed to start it. So we'll probably hear his voice here in a second. But basically, we're going to cut into the middle of this voicemail. Rick has a few thoughts that we can share with everybody, and then I want to respond to a question he asked me.
The success that they had, Siler, was just way too
positive. That is Daniel Butcher. That is Daniel Butcher.
You share your story first.
Well, I guess I would just say, there were some mysteries that didn't get properly answered, but I don't necessarily, for some reason, it doesn't bother me. I mean, of course, I'd like to know all the answers, but I think some things are okay, they just leave up in the air and let you try to fill in the blanks with your...
I agree, but here's the difference. Here's the difference, and I made this point before you had watched Buffy.
Yeah. Okay, I know exactly what you're going to say.
The way that Buffy ends almost every episode is on a character beat.
Yes.
The way Lost ended almost every episode was on a cliffhanger mystery beat.
To bring you to the next episode.
Exactly.
It was kind of like the end of a chapter in a book.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Buffy almost ended as if you just read a mini book, and you'd finish that story, and now...
And what I would argue is that from a storytelling standpoint, to end almost every episode that way makes a promise about we are presenting you with this piece of information you want to know. We will give you the answer. It's a storytelling promise the way that it's structured. And so had they structured their episodes differently, I think your case would be a lot stronger.
I think that's an interesting argument, but you're really making an assumption. That's an assumption that because they're ending episodes that way, it's a promise. It's not necessarily...
Well, no. I'm not assuming their intention. They might not have intended it that way. I'm saying regardless of their intention, that's what that editing technique does from an audience standpoint.
Let me tell you some of the people behind the scenes that you're going to know.
Damon?
If you recognize their names.
Damon Lindelof.
They got a big start here at Lost.
He's not as good as we thought he was.
Damon Lindelof.
Damon Lindelof?
Carlton.
Of Nash Bridges fame?
Carlton Cuse.
Oh, him?
Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, who have done Once Upon a Time. Elizabeth Sarnoff, who I'm friends with on Facebook.
I think it's time for Rick.
Jack Bender, director, and Michael Giacchino, great composer.
The show really
here's
moved
Rick.
Me. It was a show that I dialogued with other fans. It was because of that show that I discovered podcasting when searching for more information about the show on the internet. And I was a podcastaholic, probably listening to about 10 different Lost podcasts. I pretty much listened to a couple hours a day after every episode through the week to the next episode, and I called several different shows over time and formed friendships on Twitter and or Facebook with several people, and have actually met a few people in real life because of this show. And I did not like the ending. I've had people try to explain it to me in a way of why I should like it, but I really felt that in the last season, they wasted all that story that they were telling off the island. All of the on-island story was fine with me, but the way they resolved this off-island story, I wasn't happy with. I thought they could have done something different. And Matt, if you liked that ending, try to explain it to me.
I will.
Wayne and Troy and some other
he people. He will.
Thanks.
All right, Rick. I'm going to try to explain it to you without spoiling, because I really want people to go watch this, and I'm still 1 year away from being able to spoil it openly because of our 10-year rule.
The ending. You've got like 7 years to go on the ending.
So this is what I feel like. I agree that some of the time they spent off the island was not productive, but I really don't know how else they could have finished a story so beautifully without doing that. What do you think, Ben?
I think they spent too much time in that place, but I liked the way, because that brought the character part to a very satisfying conclusion.
I feel like it's one of the best endings of any show I've ever seen, in the sense that it brought it to a complete conclusion. There's never been a show that I can think of that has concluded a character's storyline better than Lost.
The character storyline was perfectly concluded. It's the storytelling aspect that really was lacking.
And then I'll just conclude by saying that the creators of the show...
Would that be Damon?
And
Carlton?
Carlton. I forgot to mention J.J. Abrams.
Oh!
Yeah, so... I was going to say, they told the story they wanted to tell.
J.J. Abrams.
He wasn't very involved.
But
he did help create it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
So, Carlton and Damon, Lindelof. They told the story that they
planned. He's not as good as we thought he was.
They planned to tell, and they wrapped up all the character storylines. So,
print that on a shirt.
Anyways, I guess I'll stop. We've talked about this so many times, and I feel like we're going to talk about it again in like a month. So,
you bet we are.
All right, go ahead. What do you think?
Number four. Well, I'm not going to guess because I know what it is from the poll.
Right.
So,
number
Battlestar
four,
Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica. I did a lot of talking on Lost. Take it away.
Oh, I love Battlestar. Battlestar was the show that really got me into serialized TV, and was also very, you know, it's interesting because I think with Lost, you were talking more about the show itself, but you could probably share a lot from a personal standpoint, the way it tied into your life. Well, Battlestar is the same way for me, because I started watching it sometime during the second season. My dad had been watching it, and then he bought the first season on DVD, so then I borrowed that from him and watched it. And then shortly after I started watching it, Annie and I started dating,
mm-hmm.
or we were dating around the time, and so I said, oh, you know, I bet you'd really like this. So I remember we would watch Battlestar Galactica on our dates. You know, we'd sit in her room with her 19-inch TV, and we'd watch episodes of Battlestar in there as the DVDs came out. And so it was a big thing for our relationship, too. So Battlestar, great show. One that, again, a lot of people were dissatisfied with some of the aspects of the ending. And some of that's deserved, some of it's not. But like Lost, a show that, from a character standpoint, was pretty much perfect in the way that it brought the characters to their conclusion.
This is interesting because, again, with Battlestar, I watched it all the way through. In fact, I'm sure I've mentioned this on the show before, but I only watched one episode on the air when it was actually aired, and that was the finale of the entire show. I'd watched everything on DVD as far as I could. Then when the last half of the season happened, I watched it. I don't remember if it was on Hulu or if I just bought it on iTunes. But then, yeah, the only episode I actually watched was the finale, and I was satisfied with the ending.
Yeah.
And I just watched it straight through. Like, I couldn't have watched it more close to the end, all in a big chunk. And so,
but see, that's part of why I think you were satisfied with it, and some people weren't. Because here's my theory.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that it? Honestly, goes back to what we were just talking about with Firefly: expectations for what could be versus what is.
Mm-hmm.
When you are watching one episode after another, what you're not doing is spending a week in between every episode and months in between every season theorizing.
Okay, the same argument is used for Lost all the time, so continue.
Yeah, and I think that when you spend all that time discussing, as Rick was talking about in his voicemail, listening to all these podcasts as you were doing, spending mm-hmm. time on the internet and talking with friends, you build this sense of what could be mm-hmm. that then what is never measures up to,
mm-hmm.
or at least is so different from, that it inevitably disappoints. Now, I do think that there are some legitimate criticisms of Battlestar from some of the storytelling standpoints at the end, but I think overall it's successful. But I think that the reason a lot of people were dissatisfied is because they had that experience of building it up to something that wasn't. Not better or worse, mm-hmm. but just wasn't.
I think that makes sense, and I think that that's probably why, in most cases, watching episodes straight through or watching seasons straight through is a better viewing experience, because it is fun to be engaged with popular culture and with other viewers and talk about what could be, but just from a story absorbing standpoint, I think it might be best to just watch them straight through, because, Lost would have been a completely different experience for me if I had watched it straight through instead of literally every single week reading tons of blogs and tons of Lostpedia and listening to podcasts and developing theories and hearing theories that I thought, yeah, that totally makes sense. That is what's going to happen. And then you get to the episode and no, that's not even close to true.
There's also a time investment too, where you, for somebody who does all that, the amount that you've invested in the show is so much higher. And so I think there becomes a feeling of the show owes you something.
And it doesn't, but it feels like it does.
Right.
So Battlestar actually has two spinoffs. Caprica, which both of us liked, you liked more, only lasted for one season in 2010.
Yeah.
And another spinoff that I think is still in process. Is that right?
No, I think it was just a one-off movie.
Blood and Chrome.
Yeah.
Oh, it was released in November 2012 as a web series. Yeah, I guess it's just a televised movie.
Yeah.
So Battlestar Galactica, our number four, great show, really like it, ran from 2003 to 2009.
All right, number three.
Number three, Doctor Who.
Oh, you gotta love Doctor Who, which you don't yet.
I don't yet, but I feel like I will someday.
Someday.
I've only watched two episodes. I just can't, I'm not interested in going back and watching it. I have to get Des to watch it.
Yeah.
That would be better.
It's a show that, man, it takes a little while for it to click. And I had really the same reaction. In fact, I almost quit watching it after the first few episodes because I was like, okay, I can see why someone would like this, but it's not working for me. And then I decided to give it a couple more, and then it clicked. And the rest is history. Once you get it, it's amazing.
Okay.
It's much like we were talking about on our Plato episode.
Yeah.
It's an insider versus outsider thing. Once you're on the inside of Doctor Who,
it's
amazing.
You're not the first person I've heard use that terminology, once you get it. What is there to get?
It's such a different show. It's so different from any other show because part of it is that there's a level of cheesiness to it, but yet it embraces that.
Yeah.
You have, on the one hand, 50 years of continuity, but on the other hand, you can just kind of jump in wherever. It's a really weird show that way where the continuity, the importance of a certain event will kind of fade into the background over time. Like, there's events in season one that are really, really important in seasons two and three, but now by season seven, they really don't matter. The show just kind of evolves and turns over in such an organic, natural way that it's unlike anything else on TV. That's the reason it's run for so long. It's because it's able to turn over its cast and its continuity and its creative team every few years and stay fresh.
Tell me if this is correct. You talked about 50 years of continuity. So it started out in 1963,
yeah,
and then it ran until 1989. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then there was a long break, and then it came back in full force.
Well, there was a movie in the 90s.
Okay. But then it came back in full force in 2005, and now it's been running straight through. And I feel like it's just been getting really popular in the last, well, I guess maybe since 2005, but I didn't really start hearing about it until about 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I think David Tennant's run did a lot.
I didn't even know it existed, to be honest, as a child. But I have other friends who had seen some of those early, older episodes, which I believe they were sort of a children's educational show at first. Is that correct?
I don't know.
I haven't seen them, but I think it was sort of what we would think of as like a PBS-type show,
yeah,
where they're just trying to teach children lessons about history, so they use a Time Lord to travel around.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I've watched very little of classic Doctor Who.
Why? Why haven't you watched it? Have you tried?
I just wasn't in the mood for it, I guess.
Some people, when they were doing the voting, they tried to say, I'm voting for new Doctor Who, not old, or vice versa. But I did not accept that. I took all those votes as Doctor Who.
Because it's all one show.
It's one show.
Right now, technically, even though you don't have to watch all the old stuff to get the new stuff, but technically they all still exist in the same continuity. It's just that the show's so unique in the way that it turns its continuity over in terms of importance that you really don't have to know anything about what happens before you jump in.
Okay. Well, we only have two left, and I'm pretty sure you're going to know which order they're in.
They are Firefly and The Next Generation.
So those are the two that are left.
Those are the two.
Do you know which one is which?
I don't.
Okay, give me the number.
Number two. Please, please, please let it be Star Trek The Next Generation. It's not. Shoot.
Number two is Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes! Yes! Thank you, Jesus!
Which means, we'll talk about it in a second, but number one,
Firefly.
Oh,
thank God.
Okay.
So I don't think I could take it if Star Trek was number one on on our show.
All right, so let's talk about number two, and then I'll talk about number two, you talk about number one. All right, so number two, Star Trek The Next Generation. This is the show that got me into Star Trek as a kid. Watch this a lot. I love this cast, whereas earlier I was saying I didn't feel connected with any Deep Space Nine cast. I feel connected with multiple characters on The Next Generation. I could probably watch most episodes if I happened to be flipping through channels and it was on. I think I could tune in and watch most episodes and enjoy it. But there is an aspect of nostalgicness in there because you find a lot of the episodes boring that you've watched of Next Generation.
There's a part of me that wants to give it another try, and then there's another part of me that just likes being the crotchety Star Trek hater. So I'm a bit torn.
I don't think it has to do with you, you know, being grumpy. I think that because you didn't watch it when it was originally on, you're not attached to it.
Right.
There's just such... I've been learning more and
more. Well, I mean, the crotchety grumpy part makes me not want to go try it again because I want to hold on to my... I like to bug the Star Trek fans.
I feel like I've been learning more and more since I've been doing this show and interacting with listeners that it matters so much what you were connected to when you were younger.
Yep.
Because you'll give something so much grace if you loved it when you were a kid.
It's true.
And so that I think there's some shows that you probably would love, Ben, because you watch it when you're a kid, and I might try to get into it and just hate it because I don't have that connection. So to me, this is one of those shows that I don't know if I would love it if I had never watched it, but because I did watch it, I do love it. The best Star Trek series that there's ever been by far. If I had to rate, if you look at all the different groupings, like the J.J. Abrams movies, Voyager, Enterprise, original series, I would say Next Generation is my favorite version of Star Trek that's ever been done.
Yeah.
Over J.J. Abrams, for sure.
All right.
And Firefly, Ben, number Firefly. One, number one, Firefly.
We gotta love Firefly.
No, I did fail to tell you that Star Trek Next Generation debuted in 1989 and ran until 1994 and has, let me just say this, one of, if not, I don't want to say the best, but one of the best series finales I've ever seen. It's so good. So All Good Things is the title of that episode. I'd say in my top five favorite finales of all time.
All right.
Sorry. Go ahead. Firefly, number one, and it came out in what year?
2002.
Two.
And ended in 2002. One of the great television tragedies of all time. Fox could not have dropped the ball more. Joss Whedon could not have done a better job on this show. In fact, Fox did as poorly as he did well, if that sentence makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's one of those shows where you and I, a lot of times, will rail against, we don't like the standalone episodes as much. The standalone episodes work so well in this show. The mythology is great. The world building's great. But it's the characters that really, really carry Firefly forward. An amazing show, a complete tragedy. You know, I talked earlier about Buffy might be better. I think you can definitely make that argument. Maybe I would make that argument, but hey, Firefly at number one, that one's tough to argue with. Certainly one of the best shows of all time, and according to the Sci-Fi Christian, the best show of all time.
Now, Ben, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure you do once I say it. This is the only TV show that you and I have watched in full together.
Yes.
The first time both of you and I experienced it was together. We watched it on DVDs. And then you went back and rewatched it. I haven't rewatched it since that first time.
Yeah.
I should, except for I did recently see scenes from the final episode, Object in Space.
Yeah.
That was an awesome episode where they basically made up a Boba Fett character named Early.
Early? Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, you could see where the show was going to go on to great things, but I'm going to stand by this. I think it's ranked so highly because people see the potential. Who knows what would happen if Firefly would have continued? It might have been just an okay, mediocre show.
Right. I think it would have been great, but I think that we've talked about, you know, don't bring it back. And part of that's because of what we just talked about with Lost and Battlestar. The investment is so high now with people in the show that even if it was back and it was great, it would be so different from what people have theorized about and imagined and dreamed about that it would inevitably disappoint.
We said recently on an episode that because of Arrested Development and how people have been not happy with the new seasons because they had so much anticipation that it came back and it wasn't as good, even though it was still good, that's what would happen to Firefly. But something's going to happen. Firefly, they talk about it too much. There's too much fan love for it. I feel like there will be a movie or some sort of maybe one season again. Something is going to happen with Firefly in our lifetimes. Not a reboot. It's going to be the same characters. Hey, here's something interesting. I never knew this. This is a little Firefly trivia. Do you know what year the show takes place in?
2300?
2517. No real reason for that. I just thought it was interesting. So, all right. I'll let you have the last word on Firefly.
It's kind of tragic when you look at the timeline of this in Joss Whedon's career, because when he launches Firefly, he has Angel, Buffy, and Firefly all running at once, and within 2 years, they're all gone. So he goes from three shows at the top of the geek world to nothing. So even though I have dissatisfaction with Avengers and some of his work there, I do have to say that there is some poetic justice and serious vindication by seeing him rise again to the top of the geek universe. So well done, Joss. Yeah. Just tell better stories.
And I've been watching some Firefly special features recently, and he still talks about how to this day, this is, I think he might say, the greatest tragedy in his personal life, where it's not a thing where time has passed and he's gotten over it. This is something that still every day he has not gotten over.
Yeah.
The Firefly being canceled, like, just so personal to him.
Yeah.
He just loved it. That's why I feel like something's got to happen. Everybody wants it back. Well, not you and me anymore, but I think there was a time when we wanted it back, when we were less educated.
Yeah. But, I mean, if it was announced it was coming back, you and I would be
We'd be on board. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, when I say less educated, I mean we've really examined these things, and especially in relationship to the recent Arrested Development business. I feel like, I think, if it came back, I'd be on board. I'd be watching everything that comes out about it. But I want this to just live in my memories as a great 13-episode run.
Yep.
A great movie. Serenity was great.
Yep.
And who knows where it could have gone, but let's just leave it in the past in happiness.
I agree.
All right, you want to hit the outro music?
Why, yes, I do.
I can't believe we're at the end of this countdown.
The Sci-Fi
I thought we had different outro music. There you go. Yeah, thank you.
The Sci-Fi Christian presents the top 50 sci-fi shows of all time.
You know, there were some graphic novels about Firefly that you read.
Yeah. And now, your hosts, Matt Anderson and Ben DeBono. They fill in some of the stuff that never got answered, like Shepard's backstory. They're worth reading.
Are they worth reading?
Yeah. Okay. I recommend it.
Oh, Ben, thanks for joining me on this journey.
Yeah. It's quite a journey.
So what if you could pick, what would you do next? Top 50 sci-fi books or top 50 sci-fi movies?
Books. But it might be a lonely episode.
What do you mean? Our audience reads.
Yes, but could you fill a top 20 list of sci-fi books?
Maybe. I mean, I honestly don't know. Yeah. Maybe. I think I'd probably ask people to only give 10 this time instead of 20.
Well, maybe we'll learn from this.
I don't know.
Make some changes.
If people have ideas on how we could do the book idea, I feel like movies is just really accessible, but I think books is more interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you have ideas, let us know. Feedback at thescifichristian.com.
I could fill a top 50 list
of books. Well, you read like one a week or more than that.
Yeah.
How many books do you think you read a week?
I don't know. About one.
Yeah.
But then I have other ones that I'm reading very slowly, so sometimes I'll finish a bunch at once.
Bennett, I can't wait to start recording live again with you. It's so weird. As we're recording this, we'll give you a behind the scenes July 31st, 2013, but we're releasing it on August 29th, 2013. So let me make sure that's right.
It's almost a month.
Yeah, so we are not going to be recording for the entire month of August.
Oh my gosh.
Because the next day we have scheduled to come back together is Tuesday, September 3rd.
Will we even be the same people by then?
I will not be. I've been married.
Yeah.
So,
You'll be Mr. Desiree Wood.
It's not exactly it. She'll have my last name and I'll be. Okay. I can't wait for this next month. It's going to be awesome. But we'll miss you guys.
Yeah.
But it's so weird I'm saying this now because they're hearing it and then next week we'll be back live.
Hey, episodes. We're coming back.
Hey, coming back next week.
Yeah, how about that?
All right, guys.
I'm getting into town today.
All right. Welcome back.
Thanks.
This is so weird.
It's been a long flight.
Yep.
I'm tired, but I'm excited to be back in town.
I'm excited to be back on the air with you guys next week, yeah. Live with
from
new
BAM
episodes.
Studios.
We'll be doing some news again, so you can get back into that. We'll be doing some sort of main topic that is yet to be determined. But for now, I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Bandy Bono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Yeah, goodbye.
Signing off.
Oh, I'm so glad Star Trek didn't win.
Yeah, I knew you'd be happy. Well, as soon as when I saw it was close between Star Trek and Firefly, I was like, oh my gosh, Ben's going to freak out. But yeah, Firefly, yeah, the definitive winner.
Amen.
Amen.